97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
This morning you said you would bomb the S out of Oman if they got in the way of reopening the Strait of Hormuz. Would you say you're out of patience with Oman as strategic
partner? No, I don't think they behave very well, but we'd handle them very easily, just like we do other just things.
Well, that was yesterday. The president really, I don't think, has said anything today, although he did write on Truth Social, the Hormuz Strait is open and operating. I think there is a fair amount of skepticism about that. But let's chat once again with Jacob Olidort, Chief Research Officer and Director of the American Security at America First Policy Institute. Jacob, welcome back. How are you this afternoon?
Great to be with you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
So what about the statement that the Strait is open or remains open? We seem to have, you know, back and forth on this, whether it's open, whether it's not. The president insists sometimes it is, and then the media reports that it's not. What's your best, you know, analysis right now of where we are with the Strait in particular?
Right. Well, so I think to put it into historical context, I think this is more open than it's been in 5 decades, and certainly getting to a more stable place. Look, at the end of the day, the reason you have the Saudis and the Emiratis having alternative pipelines moving energy through there is because they've known that this is not a reliable waterway to depend on. It has a lot of risk from the Iranians, and of course, they're acting up. But at the end of the day, we have a naval blockade in place, which every day is placing economic strain and pressure on the regime. And we have a growing consensus among our partners that Iran is a threat and that this is in their best interest. And now the question is really to get all of our global partners who rely on this waterway more to do their part in taking it over. But I think at the end of the day, we are shepherding it into a new era of stability.
So when the chief negotiator, one of the negotiators for Iran, says that the Strait of Hormuz will remain shut until Washington meets the conditions contained in an interim agreement reached in June, I guess that was the memo of understanding, they say it's shut. So how do you know what really is happening? You can see the traffic in the Strait, and it's moving at an acceptable pace?
Well, there are two things here. First of all, we have to remember this is the last chip that the Iranians have to play. I mean, they don't really have any ability to mount greater military kind of threats. I mean, certainly I don't want to minimize the threat, but in the way that they had been prior to Epic Fury and certainly Midnight Hammer before. But point number two, and this is really important as we're getting these statements out of different elements inside of Iran's leadership. They're speaking for a domestic constituency. We have to remember this is a new team at the top, and it's not even the B team, it's the C team.
Yeah.
And there are elements, even among the IRGC, that are competing among one another and among the clerical elite to outmaneuver each other. Who's more who's more able to escalate, who's more able to stand up for their destructive agenda. So I think that ultimately is in our best interest to have them at loggerheads with one another.
You know, one of the things, Jacob, that I think a lot of the American people are thinking, and we're doing this based, I'll just speak for myself, but I think other people are, you know, kind of noodling on this the same way. You got a president that really does what he says he's going to do. He makes threats and he follows through with those threats. So there have been a lot of threats here with Iran, and we know that we've hammered them pretty hard, but the president seems to indicate, well, if they're not going to negotiate, we're going to hit them harder, we're going to harm them, you know, all this stuff. But we don't do that. So two questions here. Why aren't we doing that? And how are the Iranians able to fire back and still hit targets? I know that that stuff is minimized and there's probably rogue, you know, actions that are taking place. But why can't we go in and just finish the job militarily?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's an important one. And I think I take it back to, look, we have a little bit of time still on our hands. I mean, really, even beyond the midterms. I mean, the president can take this however he wants, and it's proceeding in the right direction. So we don't have to use that military force in that way today. But I think the other part of it, too, we are trying to manage. It's not just the regime itself. And by the way, I mean, that is because they still have those drone capabilities, mm-hmm. the domestic manufacturing. But it's because we're trying to shape the conditions in the neighborhood. So you see that pressure on Oman, which is exactly right, and other partners trying to shape those conditions so that once it's completely finished, that everything else is in place to get it in a stable condition.
So what happens next? Because it just seems to be this is stalled and then something comes out and Trump says something and we're in this cycle right now, especially now that the memo of understanding has expired, although, you know, the president pretty much declared that over early July. So we knew the conditions weren't being met, but they still seemingly are holding out for some diplomatic efforts, right?
Well, I think also two things. I think the memorandum of understanding served several important purposes. One of them, of course, was to account for the global energy markets and some of the domestic price fluctuations. But part of it also was to really call Iranians bluff. They have violated now the most important international understanding of nations, the freedom of navigation. It's one nation doing that. And so right now, I think it's look, to see what kind of pressure we can get out. I think it's in our interest as well, I'd say, for this infighting to continue with the regime. While we are sort of marginalizing other proxies, Hezbollah in Lebanon, hopefully the militias as well in Iraq at some point, too. I mean, the new government there is taking a close look. So, again, all of that, I mean, at the end of the day, the American people have to understand the context that this is a five-decade-long regime of terror that we are really unwinding. And that takes a little bit of time, but so far that time is on our side. And the overall direct impact because of this has been, I don't want to be flippant, but I mean, it hasn't been as big as some of the media narratives have portrayed. And our military footprint has been fairly, fairly self-contained as well. So I think all of that is important context.
Jacob Olodort back with us. He is the director of American Security at the America First Policy Institute. A couple weeks ago, I don't know if you and I talked about this because you've been on, you know, somewhat recently, but I haven't heard anyone else talk about this. Ted Cruz encouraged and urged the president to provide weapons to the anti-government demonstrators in Iran. Is that a serious line of thought here, or should it be?
It's a good question. You know, obviously I have no visibility and, you know, if those conversations even are being had. You know, I suspect, you know, the senator is obviously doing his part to give advice and consent. Kind of looking, you know, obviously there's the overall policy being happening, but he's sort of trying to address other angles that might be adjacent. On that specifically, I simply don't know. I mean, so much of it obviously is circumstantial and dependent on what reality looks like on the ground, too.
So, well, and, you know, so some of this is obviously political because you got the midterms coming up here. You got gas prices that are staying high. There's frustration, I think, amongst Republicans that are kind of keeping quiet. They're hearing from their constituents, but the president's moving forward the way that he wants to move forward. I just, you know, I've been concerned from the very beginning here with the timeline kind of getting way extended. And just the lack of focus on just finishing the job. Now, again, I know this is tough. And, you know, even though Trump talks a big game and a few months ago he was talking about wiping them off the planet, he's simply not going to do that to civilians. And there have to be military targets. So that's what makes this even trickier at this point. But I guess a lot of people would say, wait, how many more military targets can we have, you know, that we haven't wiped out?
That's right. And no, and you and I have talked about as well. I mean, what does finishing the job look like militarily? You know, the fact is also there are maybe targets even or ways of thinking about this outside of the borders of Iran that actually might be important as well. And I mentioned Hezbollah. So I think, you know, bringing that towards, you know, a different place of resolution would be important. The militias, the Houthis there starting up, thinking about that waterway. So, I mean, at the end of the day, in some ways, this is kind of a global issue, but I think that's part of why we're doing this. I mean, you think about the Russia-Ukraine war, too. That is direct ties here. It might be part of finishing the job, too.
Well, yeah, that's actually a good point. You know, it's interesting. I'm watching this this show right now. We just started a couple weeks ago on Apple TV Plus called Tehran, and it's in its second season or has had two seasons. But the reason that I bring it up is that, you know, and they filmed it in Greece, so they didn't film it in Iran. But look, Tehran is like 10 million people, right? That's 10 million people there. And we don't have a good sense of what is happening inside Iran, like inside Tehran with all those people. How are they being affected? Are they getting crushed with, you know, the economy and inflation? Because we've heard, and I think it's true, that the economic blockade has been successful. But I mean, Jacob, we just don't get any good sense of what's happening inside that country, do we? I'm sure the CIA does, but for the most part, the rest of us don't.
No, Mark, you're exactly right. And I think they've just kind of passed new laws there about prohibitions on speaking to foreign press there. Look, I mean, two things here. First of all, well, the people have been crushed for five decades under this regime is the broader context. But the other piece that you bring up, I mean, look, we have some of the images of the funerals there, of some of the leadership that had been taken out. There are still constituencies there of the regime supporters. And I think that's part of the reality when we talk about what happens next and why I believe it's so wise of the president not to make that an objective of U.S. policy here. I mean, that, first of all, is not the focus. I mean, the focus is eliminating the threat to the American people, which is his responsibility as commander-in-chief, which he has achieved in large part. But the other part is that it's just so complex as a country. It's a much bigger country than anything we've been engaged in recently. And so, and I think fundamentally, so it's worth kind of taking it one step at a time from that standpoint.
Yeah, it's just so complicated. You're great at explaining all this, though, Jacob. Thank you so much for coming on this afternoon. I appreciate it. All right,
thanks,
yeah, you take care.
Get more at 971talk.com.